All right, welcome back, everybody. Tonight's 40-minute speaker is David O. from Orange. Please give a hand for David.
I got to speak?
Yeah. Here, read this. Read this. They're not listening to anyone. Yeah, be good.
What's that? I'm an alcoholic. My name's David. And I'm from Yorba Linda. I got sober in Fullerton. And I got a disease of ADD. ADHD, actually. Alcohol, drugs, and heavy drama. But I'm an old man. I got introduced to AA. Well, let's start at the beginning. Both of my parents are alcoholics. And they divorced before I was even 4 or 5 years old. But I do remember walking around the coffee table drinking beer off of it, you know. And they would say how cute I was, and I liked that. So and that was the first part of appreciating alcohol. Everybody hear me? Okay. I want to thank you guys for coming here tonight and letting me speak. God helped me find this place. I drove by it 3 times. I haven't been here since I worked down there by the pier. And I didn't know the streets that well. And I can't see very well at night. You can't read the signs. But I got here. And it was my higher power, who I call God. Because all I did was just say the serenity prayer and say, okay, God, get me there. And he did. He got me right out here, and twice. I went by twice. And I went clear down to the other side of the main street where the pier, and I got back here. Anyway, so I was a young kid, and I appreciated alcohol. My folks really appreciated it. They were always fighting and drinking and smoking, and they sold their house. I'm also from Portland, Oregon. And they sold their house and bought a bar up at Coeur d'Alene Lake in Idaho. And I remember being part of that. And then they moved into Kellogg, Idaho, and bought another bar. And I spent a couple of years there living in the back house. Walked out one morning and saw a dead guy there in a pool of frozen blood. I watched various girls getting laid in the back house. Just a lot of things a kid should see, you know. But it gave me a nice adult life. My dad finally found out about it, and he wanted me to come down and live with him in Medford, Oregon, so I did. And that lasted about 3 years. And by then, my mom divorced the other guy and moved down to California. So I ran away. I wanted to go be with mommy. And it doesn't just stop there. Every time I did something wrong, when I was drinking, I'd always run back to mommy. Mommy will take care of me. And but I went into high school there at California, up in the Bay Area, in Vallejo. And I didn't graduate because I had to quit and go into the Air Force in my senior year. My senior year consisted of PE, a trade machine shop, a trade sheet metal shop, and a PE period. That's all I had to do was just stick it out 6 more months and I would have graduated. But no, not me. I had to do it my way. And don't we do that? I mean, we're very compulsive, we want it right now. Went into the Air Force, got stationed at Texas. Cockroaches, very big, and didn't get out very much there. Christmas time, I was I went in November, Christmas time. I was sent up to northern Texas there at Wichita Falls, and that's where I got out. I got to go to the PX, and buy that 3.2 beer, and fall in love with a little waitress. Didn't even know her name, and I gave her what would amount to about a $400 bracelet, because I wanted her, and I would buy her, or whatever. But that's the way my thinking went. I didn't even know her name. I wanted to take that hostage. I got shipped over here. I got drunk a lot on that base, but I got shipped over here to March Air Force Base. And there I was kind of jealous because Elvis was in Fort Hood when I was in Texas. And he got to go to Germany, and I got to go to California, and Southern California over here at Riverside. So I went in immediately after about 2 weeks of working out in the shop and told the captain that I wanted to transfer over to Germany. I wanted to get out of here. I wanted to see the world. And he says, okay, you can get a transfer. Go over and see this Lieutenant Cook by the PX at the Special Services. And I thought, all right, Special Services, everything. Went over there and saw him, and he says, you're going to be the lifeguard at the swimming pool, the officer's swimming pool. I said, okay, I'll do that. And I got to go out every night, got to go downtown and party, and eat four meals a day. And I was nice and golden tan and 205 pounds of solid muscle and drunk every night. And I finally went into the captain and I said, hey, I want out. I can't handle this. It's, you know, I don't like coming back to the base. You know, I just flaked out. So they let me go, and I worked a lot of various jobs around Riverside, and ended up with a motorcycle. I've been riding motorcycles since I was 14. I was mechanically inclined and got on them, and ended up, when I was 21, I ended up in an outlaw bikers club. And I next 3 years, I was drunk on the West Coast, from Portland to San Diego. And I partied. That's all I did was party. I hardly even remember any of it. Just a couple people that I met that I knew in junior high school I met, and a woman that was a friend of mine in junior high. She was property of, and I watched her get traded for a light switch. And that started me thinking. I'm a slow learner, too, on top of everything else. I'm a plain dumbass. And I started thinking about the way she was and what she was being used for. And then I started thinking about my life. I was getting used. I had to do everything under the book for somebody else. And I thought I was a leader, but I was a follower. So I kind of just disappeared for a while, and retired, and changed my MO, put on a suit. Went to work for a company up in Santa Rosa. And that's where I first got introduced to AA. My mom joined AA, finally. And I was on disability. I hurt my leg, and I was relaxing. I had a nice little job. I was the captain of the SS inner tube that went down the Russian River from Gallo Winery down to the dam, if anybody knows that area. Every day I did that. Every day with a bottle of wine, a gallon of wine. And I got introduced in 1967, July 6th, actually. And I stayed sober for 3 years. I said I was an alcoholic. I took the first half of that first step, and that was it. And everything went fine for about 3 years, and then I started smoking a little bit of grass and a little of this, and next thing you know, I was out there, and my wife left me, and again, my second wife left me, and I was going through them pretty fast. They 2 years most on all three wives, and so I went out and got a job where I could travel around the country building restaurants. I went to first job was Phoenix, and I built a restaurant there and partied like you wouldn't believe. I ended up going to Davenport, Iowa, and starting a job there. Had to go down south. And I went to jail in each one of these towns, fellas. Each one of these towns. I went to Chicago and started a restaurant. I went to jail there the first weekend. Sitting in Cook County Jail, thinking I'm a badass. And all it was for somebody stole my license plate. And the cop went out there to get my checkbook so I could bail myself out, and he found a 380 in the door handle and a bag of grass. So I was in trouble, and that cost me a lot of money. But money, that's all. Back then in the 70s, it was, you didn't go to jail and didn't get big fines. You just paid your way out and you went on to the next thing. They didn't have the big computer then. I had to go back to Davenport, Iowa and finish that job. I got there and got drunk one night, 6 o'clock in the morning. I was going to work straight out of the bar, and I sideswiped about 6 cars and rear-ended this guy right down in work doing about 60 miles an hour. Totaled out the El Camino that I was driving, and the judge threw me out of Iowa, and my boss fired me, and I came back here to Southern California, where I knew everything. I had a girlfriend here that was writing me, and I picked her up hitchhiking in San Francisco, and she kept writing me after a one-night stand, and she wanted a biker, and I wanted somebody to, you know, buy me that bike. And she was a masseuse. She was a masseuse, and she made good money. And when I wasn't bailing her out of jail, and I had a good lifestyle then. And but she overdosed on Quaaludes. So that's the style of life we had to lead, or thought we had to lead. And I got married. I had my my chart done over in Phoenix when I was over there, and this woman told me I was going to meet this redhead that sweep me off my feet. So on November 17th, 1978, us guys from the construction site, this one guy talked me to go out and dress up, you know. And dress up to me was going out and buying a 3-piece disco suit. What do you call those things? I can't even think of it now. Anyway, I went out there and looked like Johnny Travolta that night in this blue suit. And this girl was celebrating her birthday with her girlfriend, and there was three of us. And my friend knew her from the insurance company she worked for, and so they introduced us, and I gave my snooty, how are you doing, bitch, you know, and she looked like Farrah Fawcett. She had that hairdo and all that back then, and she was beautiful, still is, but the we got together later on that night. She found out I had the two boys from my first marriage. I was trying to keep them alive, but I needed somebody to take care of them. So, and that was February the 17th, March the 25th, we got married. I even shaved my beard off. Shaved my beard off, called her every night at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning to let her know that I loved her. And this poor girl didn't know where she was at when we got married. I mean, I had her so confused and so, you know, lack of sleep and everything. She's still making up for it. She goes to bed at 8:30 every night. But we got married, and things went well. On March the 25th, we went up to Tahoe, got married, and come back down July 4th. We had a little party, and bingo. I got drunk. I got mad at her. She wouldn't do what I said, or she was telling me what to do, and I didn't like it. So I ran. And where did I run to? Riverside. I had a little Porsche car, and I was doing over 100 miles an hour, and the cops said, pull over. I got out, went to jail over in Riverside, and called my wife. She says, well, you got in there, and you get yourself out. Oh, shit, I knew I was in trouble then. So I called my lawyer. I did some work for this lawyer, and I called him, and I said, I need help. Can you bail me out? He said, sure. Because he knew I was worth it. And he got me out. I went to school 10. That was it. No AA whatsoever. And I still didn't think anything about AA. I really didn't know anything about AA. This went on. I kept getting better and better at my work. I was a contractor, and things got broke loose for me. I made a lot of money, worked downtown L.A., signed up with a couple of unions, was making big bucks. My favorite saying was, you don't make enough money to pay my taxes. That's arrogant. That's, you know, I look at that now, but then it sounded cool. You know, I was hanging out, and I did a job at the Cedars-Sinai Hospital and the Hard Rock Cafes right across the street. I went in there at noontime every day, and when my money ran out at the ATM, my $300, I'd go home. And one night, I couldn't make it home, so I stayed in the hotel because I had a credit card. I ran out of money. I had a credit card, and I stayed in the hotel across the way. And 2 o'clock in the morning, I was just barfing up everything I didn't like. That yellow stuff in the stomach. So I just stood in the shower and tried to get sober. Next morning, I didn't have any money for breakfast. That hotel, La Maison or something like that, gave away a loaf of French bread for you staying there. And I took that French bread and ate it. That's the only thing that soaked up all that stuff in my stomach. And I made it home, and the wife says, some girl's been calling you. You're supposed to meet with her and show her all the architectural stuff that you've done. And all the, you know, I was romancing somebody that I shouldn't have been romancing. And my wife would have to be my secretary at the office. And shit, I was in trouble. So I had to call, you know, cool it for a while. And that's what I did. I ended up being a binge drinker. My wife said she could figure out when I was going to go out. You know, I work up to it. This kid across the street come over and he says, hey, Dave, I just got out of a halfway house. You want to go to a meeting with me? He knew I was in AA, but I was riding this bike. See, and I was a badass biker, and he liked that. Well, he ended up taking me to that meeting. And I said, sure, I'll go to that meeting. I know all about AA. I went there, and it was the Harley Men's Stag up in Fullerton on Sunday night. And I walked in there, hid behind the post that was sitting there. And they asked me to lead the meeting. I said, okay, I'll do it. And I led the meeting. I knew everything, you know. And then he said, what step are you on? How many days you got? And they asked me all them stupid questions. And I told them I got sober a long time ago, and that I was in trouble. And I needed help. He says, well, you get yourself a sponsor. And I looked around, and there's a couple old guys there, and then this young kid. I said, that's the kid I'm going to get. Somebody I can control. So I got him. And he was a, he did the steps, all of them. And it took him a year to get me to work my four step. And that's how long it took him. And the thing was, he moved away, and I had to go to his sponsor, which is Frank Albertson, fame from Laguna up here. And he would say, "Sport, let's work that fourth step. What are you doing about it?" And I told him, and he said, he started writing it down for me, and he says, "This is how you work it. You write down these resentments," and he wrote them down for me, because I wouldn't do it. I didn't like writing. And he knew how to do that. And then he says, "Now you fill out these other three spaces, you know, one at a time. We'll go over them. I'll explain them to you." And I went through the whole thing with him. And he says, "Well, sport, how do you feel now?" I felt good because I told him some shit that I didn't think I would tell anybody. And it wasn't bad stuff to him. He's heard it all. And now, thinking back on it now, I didn't do anything bad. I was too scared. I was trying to keep up with everybody else. But that young kid got me to stay in AA. He took me, I got involved with the conventions. I got involved with H&I. I got going to meetings. The second meeting that I went to, it was on a Thursday night. The kid told me to go into the dog on the roof, the old dog on the roof, and meet this big guy named Joe, Big Joey. And he was a mercenary. And a biker and a mercenary don't get along. And there was just something about it. And he didn't like me. I didn't like him. And he had 7 years in. And I had 6 months. And I made secretary of the meeting. And he come by and showed me his 7-year check. Gave it to me. And we had our tables in a circle. I just took it and I said, "Oh, that's nice." And I threw it out by God's chair there in the middle. And God, he was mad. And his stories went like this. I electrocuted a guy today in his chair at work. You know, he hooked up 110 volts to his chair and electrocuted. That's the type of guy he was. And I was messing with him. And he got me back later, but it was at a camp out. It wasn't fun either. But I've enjoyed AA. I came unprepared tonight, of course, don't we all? And then, like I said, I'm heavy drama, and that's gone away. After I worked my steps, I went to the 1990, I went up to Seattle to the World Convention. And that's where I made up my mind. Me and my sponsor, first sponsor, rode up there on the bikes. And we had a beautiful trip up. And we get up there and everybody from all over the world was there. And, you know, smiling and happy, throwing hugs around. And, you know, just a great time. And at the closing meeting, this blind girl from here in Southern California, I can't think of her name now, she was singing Amazing Grace, and everybody was standing up, going back and forth and holding hands. And I looked around, there wasn't a dry eye in the house, including mine. I wanted to be there. I wanted this joy. Joy is happy and free. And that's what I felt. So I made up my mind there that I was going to really get into AA. And I come back, and I got into the central office, started volunteering down there, answering the phones and working with other alcoholics and H&I, and I just progressed, and it just took time. T-I-M-E, a friend of mine used to say, and it was took a lot of time, actually. I've got 21 years now, and I still feel like I'm on day one. The only thing today is that I got a God that takes care of me. In the morning, I say, "God, thank you for this beautiful day." I've learned that He gives me a beautiful day. And I ask Him to help me be the best I can be and help me do it Your way. And so far, He's helped me out. Sponsor number one said, the more you put into AA, the more you'll get out. Sponsor number one also told me, since I was making good money, to go ahead and put $2 in instead of $1. And I said, "But nobody else does it." He says, "Well, you do it." more you put in, the more you get back. And I'll be damned. I haven't had a financial problem since then. I paid the IRS off a lot of money. And, because that's, you know, I couldn't pay my own taxes, you know, much less anybody else not making enough to pay them. I didn't pay my own taxes, payroll and everything. So I got in trouble. I got in trouble every time I turned around, it seemed like. And it was my alcoholic thinking. But you guys convinced me that I was an alcoholic and that I had to work with other alcoholics and that I had to change. Do 180 degrees. I didn't believe that at first. What the hell is this 180 degrees? How about me just doing a little bit and then taking it back and going the other direction? And it didn't work. I did finally do 180 degrees. I had to keep my mouth shut, opened up my ears, and help other alcoholics. And it reminds me, I was reading a magazine today at work, and there's a little article in there, and it's a work magazine. It's and it had help. It showed the button, the Staples button that said help, the little red button. It's help. And it's, this is out of a one-minute manager. H is humility. You don't think less of yourself. You think more of other people. You think less. You know. So that's I screwed that up, by the way. But anyway, you think more of other people. And then the E was enthusiasm. You're more enthusiastic. Okay. You get more into it. And you work harder at it. And that's a program. And I read program in this whole thing, and it was about being a manager. And L meant listening. And he says, you got to listen. Listen to your other people, and so on. And that's what I had to do in AA. I had to listen. And then praise. Praise another alcoholic for the good work he's doing. And it comes back at you because you can look in the mirror and see what's happening to you. That's how I've worked my program. I've had to go out and change my life totally around. I used to have to work, you know, I worked for myself. I couldn't be employed by anybody else. And I finally went to work for another guy. And he's a lot like me. He's in the program. And I've worked for him for 15 years now. And that's amazing. I've just learned. I went through 28 people the first year I worked for. That's how controlling I was. They had to do it my way, or the highway. And, you know, I was an old construction person, hard ass. And today, I just tell them what to do, and if they can't do it in 2 or 3 days, then we talk to them and try and train them. And, you know, we do the right thing. And we treat them like human beings instead of slaves. And, but that's what you guys have taught me. You guys come in here and tell your stories about divorces and marriages and accidents that you get into and your loved ones die. You're dying. I've seen a lot of people go away, die with, God, I just hope I die like that, with such grace. They have grace. And then most of them would say, how are you doing, Dave? You know, they would ask about me, not, you know, they don't want to hear about themselves. They're dying. They know that. They don't want to talk about it. They just, how are you doing? And that's what I've learned in here. It's just to start talking about what you guys want. So what do you want? You want me to talk better? Be funny? I can be that, but I'll have to change my thinking. I'm thirsty. I'm sorry. Is this mine? Thank you. I skipped around quite a bit because I left that piece of paper at home. Put it in my lunchbox. I took it home, got cleaned up, and left it in the lunchbox. But that's me. So forgive me, but I'm an alcoholic, believe it. I did some shit in my life I'm not proud of. But I made amends for them all because I was able to. My wife, the one I took hostage, the one that I still blame for everything that goes wrong. I don't know what it is about me, you know. I'm never wrong. You know, she says, "You're never wrong, Dave. How come?" And that's just the way I am. I jump at her every chance, you know. Try and blame at her. But I'm getting a lot better. Really, I am. I'm a pretty nice, soft guy. And she's still with me. She still loves me. And I got grandkids today that love me. In fact, next week I'm going to fly out to Indiana and see them. I get to do that today. I retired twice. Had to go back to work because of this depression that we got going. I overextended myself like most people did. But the thing is that through the program, I'm paying all the credit cards back. I started a business, and I lived off of that, off the credit cards for 2 years, trying to run this business. And last year, I called it quits, and I talked to my buddy, and he hired me back. And I'm paying off the bills. That's over $100,000. And that's, you know, I made a big investment in that motorcycle shop I had. And it didn't go through. I mean, the day I opened it was the day the depression started. And it seemed like a lot of things happened to me like that. I buy a diesel price goes up above the gas price. And just everything goes different than the way I think it should. And was it time?
No.
Oh. Oh, it's 9:03, I see. Okay. Oh, God. Another half hour. Another 25 minutes. All right. First wife. Minister's daughter. She got pregnant. Had to marry her. Didn't want to marry her. Told the mother-in-law I didn't want to marry her. Mother-in-law says, "Yes, you do." I got married, and that lasted 2 years. That's how I ended up in Northern California. And there I went to work. I was a good... I'm a workaholic when I don't drink. And I'm good at what I do. I build things. And I stayed in town. You know, we lived a little 5 miles north of town, and but I could get home. I had to hit these bars and see all my buddies, and we would discuss the way this town was going to run, because it was kind of a company store town and a lumber yard. And we knew if you worked there, you knew everybody in town. So I couldn't make it home at night. I always stopped at the bars. And the first wife didn't like that, so she said, "You don't bring home any money, you don't do nothing, I'm out of here." So she left. And the day she left, she had a little 6x8 trailer, not very much in it, but it was everything I thought I had. And she left me. She blamed my friend, that was my drinking partner, actually. She blamed him for my drinking, and I agreed with her. I said, "It's all his fault." So we went out and I partied that night, and I ended up picking up a girlfriend, or a girl, and I took her to the house, and I says, "Oh, Look at what my wife, ex-wife did. She took everything. Yeah, what a pain in the ass I was. It was sick. Alcohol does sick things to you. And I look back on that, and that's nasty. The second wife, picked her up in about a year later, and we lived together for a while. She got pregnant, and we had a little love child back in the 70s, a beautiful girl. And she still loves me. And then I got married to her, and it was just that piece of paper, I guess. A year later, we were gone. What I did is I got a part-time job at a bar because I had all these bills to pay because I was drinking too much, I guess. And one night this girl come in and said she had 6 months to live. She had cancer. So I told her, I said, come on, I'll show you how to live that last 6 months. Get in my 52 Chevy pickup, and we took off. I took off up to Oregon with her. We slept in the orchard the first night. You know, this is some stupid stuff. And a week later, I was tired of her, and I let her go back, and I stayed in Reno. We made it to Reno, at least. And my second wife come out. Nobody knew where I was for a week. And I didn't make no headlines, like everybody else around here does. But my wife, when I finally called, and my wife came out there to Reno, and we moved to Sparks, Nevada. I worked out there for a year or two as a carpenter, and I spent all my money at the casinos and drinking. And she got tired of me. One night we lived in a trailer home, bought a new trailer home. She was sitting on the pot. She put her fist through the door. You know, they're cheap doors, but she still put her fist through it. And she left me. I wonder why. You know, all these things that happen. I wonder why. Then I got this job building restaurants all over the United States out of that. I worked for this guy up in Reno. And he gave me a job as a superintendent. I went around, and every town I partied in, I had fun in. I destroyed things and used people. Alcoholism takes us everywhere we don't want to go. And we think we're having fun. And then the third wife was the masseuse. And I gave up on her. And broke up with her, and it was about a month later that she overdosed, and I got all the dog and all the cars and all that stuff. And then I met my wife, and my wife stuck with me. I say, I want a divorce. I get drunk, and I say, I want a divorce. And she'd say, no. I pass out on the floor. Why don't you cover me? Why didn't you cover me last night? It's your problem. You fell asleep on the floor and you cover yourself up. And she was nasty. She was a good looking pair of faucet, but god damn, she was nasty. And she made me do, you know, she had a kid, a 6 year old girl when I met her. And she was raised, and she's a good mom. She's a good cook. We raised the two boys for a couple months until one of my boys come down with poison oak because the homegrown had some in it, and the ex-wife heard about it and come and got the two boys, the first wife. So I was no saint there for quite a while until I was 49 years old. I was 27 when I was first introduced to AA, and I enjoyed that 2.5 years that I had sober, even though I didn't work any steps or anything. And I accomplished a lot. I talked to a friend today that I worked with back then. And he asked me, how you doing? What's going on? How's your health? This and that. The good old boy, you know. That's it. We get together once every 3 or 4 years. I get to do that. And today I got friends. I got lots of friends. Go to a meeting. I go to the Harley, I went to the Harley Men's Stag for a long time. I'm kind of a motorcycle enthusiast. I, you know, opened a motorcycle shop and, you know, got three motorcycles. Going around with different clubs. And, but the thing is now that I'm more of an enthusiast. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I like to just go ride. And it's what I want to do if it doesn't bother the wife. I ask her first what I can do. I ask my sponsor what to do. I didn't ask him about opening this business. And it went sour. So I kind of learned my lesson there. And that was just a couple of years ago. I'm 20 years sober and I'm not asking my sponsor what to do. So now I'm asking him all the time what to do. And, today I'm the man I've always wanted to be. Today I'm providing for the families. I'm helping other alcoholics. And I'm having fun every day. One day at a time. It's gotta be one day at a time because I think too much. My mind goes 1,000 miles an hour. You should have seen me coming down here. In the dark, I can't read the signs. It was just right at sunset when I was trying to find my way around here and can't see the signs. And I'll tell you what, I got here. I looked on Google Earth before I came and I kind of realized it was north of the pier and two streets up and off the coast. And I got here. But it was just, I had to say the prayer a couple times. God, you're going to make me there and you're going to get me there on time, aren't you? And he did. I got here and we had a nice little talk out front. Got to meet Fred. I had to look his name up. I can't remember very much. We talked about people that we know that have died and gone away. Dr. Paul. Frank O'Rourke. Those people are gone. Johnny Crean. Today, I get to go on camp house for my meeting on Thursday night in the men's stag. They do two camp outs a year, and I go on a spiritual retreat in the summer in June up at the Catholic. I was raised a Catholic, and that's why I hated God. God hated me. Nuns told me that he's going to punish me. So that's why I hated, and, you know, I left God. I left him a long time ago. The nuns beat me with a ruler, took me into the closet, took my pants off, and hit me with a ruler. Second grade. I remember that shit. That was God's doing. But now, today, I'm spiritual. I have a God in my life, and I have a higher power, and I call him God. And I'm not ashamed of it. When I was asking directions down here, some guy says, God bless you. I said, thank you. And I thought, you religious freak. Yeah, but, you know, it's still there. It's still there. And, you know, I still take other people's inventory. I try not to, but I do. And you guys are a good-looking bunch of alcoholics. I'd drink with you anytime, I think. I probably have down here. About 25 years ago, but I've had quite a life in AA, a lot of experiences and a lot of rewards, a lot of rewards. I get to see a sponsee of mine. He's 89 years old now. I met him in the hospital and I was doing a panel, and he was shaking, couldn't remember anything, and he called me. A week later, I was working central office, and he called me on the phone. He says, I'm looking for a meeting. And I said, were you in the hospital? You know, and I asked him, and he says, yeah, I was in the hospital. I said, well, I was up there on a panel. Said, I'll take you to a meeting. And I took him to my men's stag. And now he's got 16 years sober. He couldn't drive, he couldn't walk. He was in a wheelchair when I saw him at the hospital. And he couldn't walk, and he started walking, he started driving. After about a year, he started driving. Then the sucker says, I'm going to go back and see my sister in Indiana. And he went back there, bought a house, decided he was going to buy a house, and he met a girl, and he got married. And they've been married for pretty close to 9 years now. And they're happy. And that's good for him. You know, that's a reward. And I get to see him next week when I go back to Indiana. And those are the rewards you get. And another thing is I get a reward to work on my speech. I get to write it down next time. Or I did write it down, in fact. Hand over to Jordan the secretary's report. No, that ain't it. Okay, I got something else, maybe. How many guys are playing on the telephone right now? That's a drug addict. How many guys are playing games on their telephone? I look around and, you know, I love to take an inventory, and I see it mostly at my men's stag, and most of them are drug alcohol or addicts. And I think it's neat that they're so compulsive. Learning a new, they got that phone down. I can't even dial out on mine. And they're sitting over there doing Angry Birds. And that's fun. I have fun in the AA. I hope you guys do too. And I hope I didn't spoil your night by being dull. I've had an interesting life. I didn't just make it sound like I did. But I'm sober today. That's what counts. And I get to carry the message. I get to talk to another alcoholic if he needs help. And I get to do the things that you guys taught me to do. I want to thank you. You're welcome.